Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano, and normally we have Trivia Friday. We love learning university and having a lot of fun with our listeners. Normally what we do this hour and a half on Fridays. But today, in light of what happened last night in Dallas with five police officers dead and threats all over the country, I'm hearing today to police, it's inappropriate for us to be lighthearted, okay? And so we've decided, but you're gonna appreciate what the guests we're gonna have on for the next hour and a half. Ed, we talked about this morning. Good idea.
Yeah, we really, in fact, we wrestled with it because, man, I was up last night watching.
You and I were texting.
We were
about
texting
11
about this. I was just shocked. I didn't know what had happened.
Your sister live in the?
My sister lives in North.
Right.
And I don't remember what I was watching, but in fact, I didn't have the TV on at all. And you texted me, and I thought, what cops shot in Dallas? And then I was just glued to it. And then, of course, this morning woke up and found out that there were five dead. I mean, it was a massacre in Dallas. And, you know, it's...
And we have a station that reaches Dallas.
Right.
In the Greenville-Dallas area. So, anyway, go ahead.
You know, it's difficult for radio. You have, you know, this is an hour and a half spot, you know, in the schedule, Trivia Friday. And you think, well, you know, if we're not going to have Trivia Friday, we could talk about this for an hour and a half.
Right.
But it's just worthy of our discussion. We're going to have some really good guests
right.
on to help us kind of sort through this. Because the sad thing is, Tim, I don't think this is going to be the last time. I mean, this is a chasm in American culture. And the violence, premeditated murder of police officers is an extremely serious step on behalf of the radical wing that's in this country.
Well, this was for the police community in America, this was their 9/11.
Right. The most police officers killed since 9/11. I think in 9/11 it was 72. So
well,
the numbers are not
this
comparable.
This was worse.
But
this was worse. And please understand what I mean by that. 9/11 was horrific. 9/11 police officers weren't singled out.
Right.
They died as a result.
You're saying for the police community.
For the police community, this was 9/11 for them because they were targeted
right.
by snipers who premeditated this murderous, ironically, against police officers who were keeping safe protesters.
Right.
Who were protesting police.
Right.
With the Black Lives Matter march in Dallas. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking to Kirby Anderson momentarily from Dallas. We've got a retired police officer coming on the program a little bit later on.
A black police officer.
A black retired police officer. But Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News, is in studio with us to give us the latest. Fred, what do we know?
Well, as you gentlemen have just alluded to, what was behind this protest march last night was the much publicized, video-wise, scripted-wise, police shootings earlier in the week, one in Minneapolis and one in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And videos were shown police officers shooting and killing two black individuals. Now, still much investigation in those two cases to go on, but the Black Lives Matter movement in various large cities in the country decided to hold protests last night. Dallas, Atlanta were two of the cities where these protests were held. The protest in Dallas occurred right downtown, just a couple of blocks actually from where JFK was assassinated. So right in the center core of the city. What we know from police officers is that at least four snipers men, perhaps one woman, dressed in military-type garb with very high-powered rifles, three of them at least situated themselves in elevated positions in these high-rise buildings around this street where the protest was being held. About 8:30, or just around that time last night, as these people were marching peacefully, protesting against these police incidents in Minnesota and Louisiana, shots began to ring out, several shots, automatic power fire weapons. People were running everywhere, as you can imagine, and police taking cover also. Within a short period of time, they had at least one of these shooters was on the ground. There's actually video showing him shooting his high-powered rifle at one point. And officers were able to corner him, and he was, what he said was, "We are here. This is not over with yet. We are here to kill white police officers, as many people as we can." At that point, they cornered him, and the reports are rather scattered at this point, whether he killed himself. There was an explosion in a car garage in the area, and that suspect was dead as a result of that incident. Again, it's unclear just how that happened. As we sit here right now, there are three suspects in custody. They are basically refusing to talk to police about what happened. But right now what we have is five police officers dead. Four of them are Dallas proper police officers. The other victim was a DART, a Dallas Area Regional Transit officer, who we are told just was married about 2 weeks ago. And there are seven other officers who were wounded. Some of them have been released. Some of them are still at the, I believe it's called the Baylor Medical Center in downtown Dallas. We have been talking to some people in Dallas this morning. One of them is a pastor, Stefan Broden, who is the pastor at Fair Park Bible Fellowship Church. It's a kind of diverse community church right in downtown. We have talked to him before. He's a leader in the pro-life movement. Just asking him his opinions, what is behind this. He has strong words against the media, the way that they have built tension around Black Lives Matter, around the police shootings. He has also had very strong criticism. He himself, a black pastor, very strong criticism of people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who he say helps foment this anger between the communities. Of course, we have seen reaction from President Barack Obama, who happens to be in Europe right now at a meeting there. He reacted this morning. He did say, "Our prayers go out to the families of these five police officers." But what has disturbed some people is, once again, he has used the opportunity to talk about his gun agenda, his gun control agenda. Some people are very upset about that. The other thing that, in the way of reaction to what the president had to say, he was quick to say, "We don't know all the details yet." And people had pointed out, when there had been shootings, police against black individuals, he has not waited for all the details to come out in the investigation. He has been critical of what has happened before knowing all the details.
Right.
As far as other political reaction that's out there, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have canceled today's events that they had planned. Hillary Clinton was going to be with Vice President Biden in Dallas. They have canceled that event. Apparently, Hillary Clinton had an event planned at a church, I believe, in Philadelphia, and she plans to go ahead with that. But Donald Trump is going to be in Miami. He has canceled his events. Both camps, the Clinton camp and the Trump camp, have sent their condolences and asked for prayer for the families of these police officers who have died and appealing for peace. We are, as you can expect, very busy in the newsroom.
Yep.
Talking. Bishop Harry Jackson, he is in Britain today. We have talked to him and several others.
African-American
Project,
leaders.
Yes, Project 21, which is a black conservative legal group. We have talked to them. So we have a lot of people that we are talking to.
Okay.
to try to get reaction. Just a couple more things. In D.C. today, there was a shutdown of the Capitol for a short period of time after a threat. Police agencies, certainly in D.C., are ordering all their officers to travel in pairs today. There was another police incident in Atlanta, but it does not appear to be related to this particular incident. That's what we know at this hour.
Okay, Fred, let us know if anything else. But you said there were four? Police?
Four snipers.
That's confirmed.
Four snipers. Three are in custody. One either killed himself or was killed by police. But the police chief, David
Brown.
Who's
been very impressive, by the way.
Oh, Dallas. He's terrific. He is not saying there may be other people who were involved with the shooting incident. There may be other people still out there not arrested yet.
Right.
He's being very
That's
cautious.
That's what he said?
He's being very cautious about that. There were some cars that sped away from the scene. They're not sure if there may be other people involved.
Okay. But, you know, it's interesting. Let's bring Kirby Anderson into the conversation. Kirby's in Dallas. Thank you, Fred.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
It. Kirby's in Dallas, has a daily program here heard on American Family Radio, Point of View radio program. And Kirby, good morning.
Good morning.
Kirby, so there were four snipers. They don't know any more about how this operation went, the assassination of the cops. Is there any talk of how this came together or who these people were?
Let me add a few pieces that we have heard because we live in Dallas. And one is the individual that was killed. His name is Micah Johnson. And he was cornered in the parking garage of El Central College. And there had been some question before about whether he killed himself. No, actually, the police killed him. What they did is they couldn't get any further. They exchanged gunfire with him, eventually realized there was no way that they were going to put another officer at risk. So they put a bomb on one of these robots, you know, the bomb robots, brought it in and blew it up and blew him up. And so that's how they were able to kill him. But before, you know, he was killed by the police, he was the one that said he wanted to kill white people. He said he especially wanted to kill white officers. He claimed that he was actually doing this by himself, but there is a group which is called the Black Power Political Organization that has claimed responsibility for these killings and has warned that there would be more assassinations coming. So that's the direct quote from what they're saying.
I've ever heard of that group.
Kirby, let me just read what was posted on their Facebook page.
And your
this is the group that Kirby just mentioned. It's called the Black Power Political Organization, BPPO. And like you, Tim, I've never heard of them before. This is what that was posted on their Facebook page. Quote, sniper assassins take down five police officers and more will be assassinated in the coming days. Do you like the work of our assassins? Get your own sniper rifle and join our thousands of sniper assassins worldwide in the fight against oppression.
Is that not illegal? Can the FBI not bust these people for
well,
that kind of thing?
Well, I'm assuming the FBI had already heard of this group. And now that they're claiming responsibility. Yeah, it's a Facebook page. I don't know if they know who the people are that have started it. You know, it's like a lot of things.
Right.
You know, this is virtual reality here. It's not an office somewhere that, you know, put out a poster. So I'm sure they're going to be on these guys. And if this is some sort of sick joke, they'll have to, you know, they'll have to recant. But
Kirby, this is a operation that had to be well thought out, well planned.
Yes, the people premeditated and precise. Yes,
and also the killers were trained. These weren't. This would be different than a confrontation at a rally that gets out of hand. Okay, this was, and also it makes me wonder. Okay, the snipers knew where the Black Lives Matter rally marchers were going to be.
Yes,
right? Am I
exactly
right?
Where they're going to end, and they triangulated them and actually picked very good shots, almost with sniper experience, credibility, and capabilities. So
I'm just trying to think rationally here.
Yes,
you have these killers, four of them, snipers. They set up. They're waiting. They're in wait for the cops and them to get in the right place where they can mow them down. I don't know how long ago this rally was planned, but it was in the last couple of days, wasn't it? I mean, they're reacting to the Baton Rouge and Minnesota deaths of the black men to the police. That's what I understood.
This protest.
So what I'm saying is the missing part of the story here is if you had these well-trained assassins, how would they know? Y'all see what I'm getting at here?
Are you asking whether there's collusion between Black Lives Matter protests and this group?
It begs the question, how did the assassins know where the rally was going to end so they could be set up to take down these cops? Is that an unreasonable question ask?
Huh? It's perfectly reasonable, and it's a great question. I'm sure the police and I guess the FBI they'll have to ask, and once they identify some of these other snipers or even the one who died, I'm sure then they'll begin checking phone records and checking computer and email records and seeing if there was communication with Black Lives Matter's, you know, organizers for this protest. All that stuff is going to happen, and there's not going to be any place unless these guys completely covered their tracks. If there's a link there, they'll find it.
What do you think about that? Is that not a? You think of the same thing, Kirby? How did this all come together like this?
Sure, because think about what they had. I don't want to get into this too much. This might be very disturbing for our listeners, but they found where the end of the route was. So you had to know something, and it may have been posted on Facebook. I'll try to check that out later. But then they are triangulated at that. So you have two up above, and they're shooting down. We do have a picture of one individual that is carrying, and it's hard to tell whether that was an AR-15 or whether it was a shotgun. But nevertheless, some of these officers were shot in the back. And so not all the shots were coming down at an angle. Some may have been on the street. You know, we'll be able to put this together in a little more detail later. But again, you had to have some kind of advance notice. And given the fact that there has been so much rhetoric over these last couple of weeks, of course, the founder of Black Lives Matter, Assata Shakur, has, you know, said some things that certainly sounded like that. Of course, just a while back, you had Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, even calling for the killing of whites. And remember, he was calling for 10,000 fearless men to rise up and kill those who kill us. So the question I guess I have is whether or not the Southern Poverty Law Center will actually list this particular group, the Black Power Political Organization, as a hate group. But let's hope that at least rational people understand what's going on.
Well, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We normally have a lighthearted hour and a half where we have fun with trivia on Fridays. But today it's inappropriate to have that kind of lighthearted program. Ed and I talked about this because of the seriousness of the and the grave.
We wanted to do this in honor of those policemen who were slain, and the ones who continue to keep us safe.
Five police officers dead, and not just dead. They were assassins. They were snipers. Snipers took them out. You know, social media has done more harm than good, I'm convinced, to our culture. I don't know how you judge that. That's just an opinion, and maybe I'm overreacting to a negative use of social media here today. Here's what's driving this. There is a perception among a lot of people that policemen in America target black males for harassment and
some just come right out and say it, murder.
Murder. You know. Okay. So there is the the Black Lives Matter and the people who think like them, they think that the white cops are out, they're at war with young black males, and so they're fighting back.
Right.
Okay. This is the perception that's out there. Ed, you ran across a very interesting statistic that is not talked about.
Yeah, this is a oddly enough, this is from a, I guess this is a sports website. Clay Travis is the one who wrote this column. The website is outkickthecoverage.com. And he says police shootings aren't a white or a black problem. This was interesting. He got this information from the Washington Post, obviously no conservative news outlet. He says, he quotes the article from the Washington Post and the statistics. He says the facts are pretty remarkable. In 2015, nearly 1,000 people were shot and killed by police. Almost all of those people shot, over 95%, were men. Okay, he says, that's probably not a surprise to you, but here was the racial breakdown of all people killed by police in 2015. 51% white, 27% black, 18% Hispanic. He said 38 people were other race. Very similar statistics for 2016. And he said, he asked this question, does it surprise you that in both 2015 and 2016, over 72% of the people killed by police were not black, and that over half of all people shot and killed by police were white in both years? Now, I got to say that was surprising to me. I've just never checked the stats. And actually, Tim, to your point about social media, that's actually where he starts his column. He says social media is driving not only the emotional response, oftentimes the anger, to events like what happened up in Minnesota and Louisiana. He said, but it's also promoting ignorance because people are flying off the handle, making judgments without knowing the facts. And he said, here are the facts from the Washington Post. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Kirby, so the perception here that we all have been led to believe, if you social media and many in the mainstream media, is that that police officers get up every day, a lot of them targeting young black males.
Yeah, they eat their cornflakes.
There's systematic racism.
Yeah.
And they eat their cornflakes, and they say, "I can't wait to go out and harass some black young males." And what Ed's citing from the Washington Post is that, so how many? What percentage of deaths?
Well, this is of the 1,000 people shot and killed by police in 2015. 95% of those were men, and here's the racial breakdown in 2015, and almost exactly the same in 2016. 51% white, 27% black, 18% Hispanic.
61 or 51% black? White.
51%.
So majority of men killed, and notice it isn't females. Females aren't running from the cops. Females aren't confronting the cops.
Now, I do want to say, just to our listeners, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm waiting for the facts to come out in the Baton Rouge and then the Minneapolis shootings. But the video I've seen looks bad.
Okay? Which one?
Especially the one in Minnesota. That looks bad. It looks like, I don't want to say, but it in terms of maybe an innocent man killed in that case, looks like it was. So I'm not saying that mistakes aren't made, and I'm not even saying that there aren't some cops who hate black people. I'm just saying the stats are showing that there's not a manhunt out for young black males for cops to kill.
But that's the narrative
that the
political left in this country wants you to believe.
Right.
Hey, Kirby, thanks, my friend, for being on with us. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Talk to you again.
Okay.
Thanks, Kirby.
Sorry we didn't let Kirby have more time there, but we ran out of time for this half hour. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, it's Miracle Monday.
I'm talking about something that can only be explained by the supernatural hand of God.
A few months ago, we had a lady put on our prayer chain with stage 4 cancer throughout her whole abdomen. and when she went back in 3 months for her recheck, there was absolutely no sign of cancer.
Wow.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. There's a lot of noise out there today, lots of angry voices, lots of hurting people in Dallas. Mothers who lost their sons, wives who lost their husbands, children who lost their fathers. The mayor has appointed noon Central Time as a moment of silence. But I believe we should start now, on this radio station, because the problems facing our nation are much bigger than hope and change. So I invite you to join me and petition the Almighty. Lord, we call on your name, we humble ourselves, and we pray. Comfort those in mourning, mend the wounded, and heal our land. I'm Todd Starnes.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Normally, we have a lot of fun on Fridays with Trivia Friday at Learning University, but today's not the day in light of what happened in Dallas last night. Five police officers gunned down by snipers. Four snipers, one of the snipers dead. The three others are in custody, I'm assuming, of the Dallas Police Department, although by now they may be in the hands of the FBI. I don't know exactly what's going on, but they have them captured. But they don't know, Ed, if there's still others at large.
Right.
That's what the police chief, what's the gentleman's name? He's been very impressive, by the way.
David Brown.
David Brown said. And so, and you know what? I felt last night, before we turned the TV off at 1 o'clock in the morning, 12:30, whenever it was, at our house, it was the mayor and the police chief. And the mayor said something that stuck with me this morning. He said that, what's the chief's name again?
David Brown.
He said, Chief Brown, as they closed their press conference, he said, "We won't be back until in the morning." He said, "Has some difficult calls to make."
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just, I shivered at that point. I was thinking, the chief is about to have to call the families.
Can you imagine? You're at 12:30, 1 o'clock. There are family members who've been watching what you've been watching on the news,
right?
Trying to find out if their loved one is one who's killed.
They don't know, and
they don't know. The police chief's got to call them.
No, he's got to call them. Whether they found out prior to the chief calling them or not,
I see. Yeah,
that doesn't take away the gut-wrenching position the chief is in. He's dealing with all this stuff going on live,
right?
And then at the same time, he's having to basically have a pastor's heart,
right?
Where he's having to call these five families and say, "Your father, your husband is dead." And, you know, and He's having it, five of them. He has to call, or talk to, and then he said he's going down to the, trying to go down to the hospital and visit those who are, you know, who are still in serious condition. I'm just saying that that just stuck with me. I was going, wow, there can't be more pressure on any one individual in the world tonight than this police chief and what he's going through. But
and it's the terror that I'm sure. It's fear. Listen, everyone knows I'm white. I don't know what it's like to be black in this country. I don't know what it's like to be a police officer either, or the member of a family with a police officer, where every day you kiss your husband or your wife or so, you know, whatever family member, you kiss them goodbye. You don't know if they're coming back. You know, it's not like they're going to work at JCPenney or something where it's a freak thing if they don't come back. This is a regular part of the job. And then when you turn on the news and you hear what's going on in your city in Dallas, police, and then the flashing police officers dead, and you're going, is it mine? I have no idea what that's like.
Well, we want to welcome to our program now Eric Muldrow. Eric, pardon me. Eric is a retired law enforcement and corrections officer with 20 years plus experience. He has worked in Gary, Indiana, and which is outside of Chicago. And many years he served in Las Vegas, Nevada. Eric now resides in Arkansas. He was on Urban Family Communications this morning with Miki and Will Addison, and Miki highly recommended Eric for an interview for this program here on American Family Radio. We're thankful for Eric for being our guest. Eric, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on.
So how many years in law enforcement, Eric?
Just a little over 20 years total. Again, just run off my background. From 92 to 95, I worked as a corrections officer at Westville Correctional Center in Westville, Indiana, a maximum security prison. In 96 or 95, we moved to Las Vegas, and I started working at the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department from 96 until 2014. First 10 years of that time, I was a corrections officer at the Clark County Detention Center, the Clark County Jail. And the last 8 years of that, I worked as a patrol officer patrolling the streets of Las Vegas.
What is it like to be a police officer that has this? I mean, you're talking about with two different jobs there you described, but especially the street beat guy out there, and some ladies too as well. What is that life like?
Oh, life as a police. Well, it runs the gamut of extremes. Most of the time, the job is very mundane and, for lack of a better term, routine. You do a lot of the same calls, you know, over and over again. Domestic violence calls, which normally end peacefully, or traffic citations or traffic stops or person stops. And for the most part, it can be, like I said, mundane. But at the same time, it can quickly escalate into a violent altercation in the blink of an eye.
I want to ask
you. You really don't know what you're facing from one moment to the next.
Right, and you have to make decisions in a few seconds that could be life and death. And of course, police officers are trained for this, but oftentimes there's different. I mean, you're trained for it, yes, but it's kind of like practicing for a football game. You can practice for Tom Brady by putting your second team quarterback over there, but you can't. Not till you get out there on the field. So it's the same way. Reactions have to be made. Decisions have to be made in a split second. I want to ask you something, Eric, about the situation that police officers are in from this point of view. With a lot of these stories that are reported on the news where someone is shot and or killed, confrontations between cops and citizens, it's learned that the person the cop or cops has confronted disobeyed an order from the police officer to either put your hands up, get up against the car, lay down on the ground, whatever the police officer says to do to try to subdue the subject, if you will. Okay, a lot of these cases you hear about where things go wrong, you later learn that that individual that was being confronted by the police basically said was belligerent, or said, "I'm not doing what you want me to do. What is a cop trained to do at the point where he's got his gun out maybe or got it drawn? The cop is heart racing. He's scared for his life maybe. And then the person he's trying to get to comply becomes belligerent or says, I'm not doing that, or runs away or runs at the cop. Seems like to me at that point, that's when the decision has to be made in about 2 seconds on what you're going to do. Anyway, go ahead. What happens at that point?
Yeah, absolutely. A decision may need to be made at a split second. And what I discussed earlier on with Nikki and Will on Aaron the Addisons, I want to bring up again, because I believe that most of the time when people, the average everyday citizen, when they evaluate these police encounters where a person that ends up dead, they look at it from a perspective of a civilian, and they don't take into account what it is to be a police officer. And that's a vital factor that can't be overlooked. And the point I brought up, there are two case laws in the Supreme Court that dictate how a police officer, a law enforcement officer, is to respond when it comes to a situation where force might be necessary. The first one is Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, versus Connor, C-O-N-N-O-R. Graham versus Connor, and Tennessee versus Garner. The state of Tennessee versus Garner. These two cases are huge. And if you will bear with me, I'm going to read a little bit to you in regard to how we're expected to respond. There are three standards or three questions that measure the lawfulness of a particular use of force. First, what was the severity of the crime that the officer believed the suspect had committed or be committing? Second, did the suspect present an immediate threat to the safety of officers or the public? And third, was the suspect actively resisting arrest or attempting to escape? And this is general force cases right here. This isn't even referring to the cases where lethal force was used, and that's where Tennessee versus Garner comes in. And I'm reading online. I'm on police1.com, and it says the court suggests that there are three circumstances where an officer can use deadly force. First, when the officer is threatened with a deadly weapon. Second, when the officer has probable cause to believe that the suspect poses a threat of serious physical harm or death to the officer or to another. Or third, when the officer has probable cause to believe that the suspect has committed a crime involving threatened or actual serious physical harm or death to another person. So that's the criteria that officers are trained and it's drilled in most departments. I can't speak for every police department, but I can speak for Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. From day one of the academy, throughout the course of your career, it is drilled into your head, the use of force. We used to have like a use of force wheel, and it turned into a use of force continuum. How it is that we respond, what type of force is best needed to deal with the current situation. So in order for someone to evaluate how a cop responds, they need to understand those case laws, and they need to understand them in detail in order to be able to judge it fairly.
Yeah, when you see these videos of these incidents, now that everybody's got a cell phone, Social media, a lot of them are maybe there's no context, or you see the last half of what happened. Yeah. It's kind of like when you ever been into a public situation. I remember one time I was in a grocery store, and with my child. One of my children, I had three, and they were misbehaving, and I tore their little fanny up right there, you know, by the bread. okay? And somebody walked around the corner. At about the time I was dealing with the kid, with my child, for his misbehavior. Well, to them, their eyes popped.
Yeah.
They were sort of, wow, man, you child beater.
Right.
You know, they didn't see what I've been dealing with for the 10 minutes leading up to that point. I'm just saying there's oftentimes more context, more to the story, another side of the story on some of these incidents that are captured on video or social media than what initially meets the eye. And what happens is, with social media being what it is today, and then you have some people who want to whip up people into a frenzy, they show something and they say, look at this cop beating this guy or shooting this guy without provocation. He wasn't even armed. The whole unarmed thing is, anyway.
Go ahead,
Eric.
I debate the whole unarmed thing because I could, if I'm 6'2", 260 pounds, and I'm in pretty good shape. If I was a criminal and I came after someone who's a cop who is 5'2", 115 pounds, and I'm coming at them with anger and I plan on hurting them, and I end up dead, the media could potentially spin the story as an unarmed black man was shot and killed. But the officer's threat perspective could be totally different because of the threat that I can impose. If I was coming after someone that size with ill will, with ill intent, I could do some serious harm. So the whole idea of someone being unarmed, could it be a potential factor? It absolutely could, but it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. It's just so unfortunate. It's just that, just in our culture, I tell people, I'm constantly trying to tell my friends who just don't understand my family, and I know that they have, their intentions are good. But so many times when we see these cases on TV and on the news, which are a cop killing a black man is good for ratings. It's big business. But the reality is, and it's something that needs to be addressed and is often overlooked, is that the statistics show that there are more white people killed by police officers. But the media loves and they'll latch onto the story of a black man being killed by a cop. And people just run away with it. And so many times when we see these videos, we don't know what happened prior. All these instances are tragic. When you see the young man, Alton Sterling's son, who was crying, heartbreaking. He's going to have to go through his life without his dad being in his life. And when you see Philando Castile being shot, I mean, I've had people die right in front of me. And it's something you never really get used to. But the reality of it is we don't know what happened prior. And for the Christian, for the believer, to look upon that and rush to judgment is so contrary to what Scripture says, so contrary to what's taught in the Proverbs when we read, about rushing to judgment. So we need to be very mindful of all that. Wait until all the facts are gathered. Wait until all the data is brought together. Wait until everyone is interviewed. Get all the information before we jump to conclusions, because that's the worst thing we can do, and nothing good ever comes from that.
Our guest is Eric Muldrow, who's a retired law enforcement and corrections officer with 20-plus years experience outside of Chicago and also in Las Vegas.
Police officer, street police officer.
Eric, Ed here. Let me just ask you this. I think it was last week or the week before, I watched a video of a Black Lives Matter protester. I want to say it was in the Phoenix area, maybe Maricopa County. He had organized a protest, and what the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department did is they said, well, we're going to put you in the uniform.
Will you do it? The fellow agreed to do it.
He agreed to do it to his credit. And
so the leader of the Black Lives Matter movement is invited by the police, come walk in our shoes for a minute.
And it was a local chapter, or state chapter.
And he did it.
And he did it in three scenarios. And he wound up shooting people, just like you're talking about, people coming at him. Did you see that, and what did you think about that experiment?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was huge because I've always argued. I have a brother who's very much, I don't know if I'm going to say necessarily anti-police. That might be a harsh term to use. But he and I constantly debate these issues. And I've always and I recall one time he was working security at a hospital in a area that has a pretty high crime rate. And he was telling me about some of the situations about some of these mentally ill people coming up and dealing with him or gangbangers, family of gangbangers who have been shot, who come to the emergency room, and the tense situations, like the fights, the near fights that took place in the waiting room. And he was like, wow, man, I didn't know all that was going on. And I remember looking at him and I just said, David, welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Because having actually walked the shoes of the individual was huge because it kind of opened his eyes to a different world, to what really goes on. I commend that one gentleman, that Black Lives Matter activist, for taking that step, because most people are content with sitting back and Monday morning quarterbacking the situations that we see without having most of the data, without having just the opportunity to really experience what it is that officer has to face, how things are viewed from his perspective. And, we can't act like those situations are so easily remedied. You hear people often say, why didn't they just take the knife from the guy or shoot him in the leg? Those things, I've seen so many videos, been in so many situations, and I've done so many scenarios where you shoot someone in the leg, that doesn't stop their upper body from responding if they truly have evil intent to do harm to somebody. That might slow them down momentarily, but the adrenaline is a powerful force. It can motivate someone to do some incredible things until eventually they succumb to the injury. But just putting yourself in the situation, trying to understand the perspective of the cop who has to do the unfortunate who might have to unfortunately take a life, that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah.
And we really have to try to do a better job as a community. And the media falls in line also. They need to try to make an effort to at least try to understand the mindset that is needed to be a law enforcement officer. I'm not excusing a law enforcement officer who takes their power and abuses it and goes out there and causes harm, whether it's racially motivated or whatever the motivation is. I'm not excusing that. I've been critical of officers who have abused their power, and I would dare say to the detriment of my own personal career, because I couldn't tolerate that being around me. I would not tolerate that being around me. Because first of all, as a man of God, I got to lay my head down at night and know that I'm right with God first and foremost. And I would tell people, I'm like, if you have any, don't bring that crap, that nonsense around me, because.
No, you're right.
If anyone comes at me and asks me what happened, I'm going to let them know.
Yeah.
I said, because I have to pay the bills. I have to take care of my family.
No, we're talking to Eric Muldrow, Muldrow, who's a retired police officer and corrections officer, 20 years plus experience in Gary, Indiana and Las Vegas, Nevada. He's a brother in Christ. He lives in Arkansas now. Do you have a website? Do you write on this?
No. People just find me on. You know, I'm just a regular guy.
Okay.
I just happen to be a regular listener. On Aaron Addison's The Turbanite, and
right.
I follow Will and Mickey, and they've seen some of my posts. I'm just very
okay.
I'm just very mindful of just the culture. Looking at the culture from a Christian perspective, but my experience does play a role in that. And I just, I'm just trying to be active about letting people understand where we come from.
Amen, brother. Here's the crux of the question and the core of the issue here, as I see it.
Yes, it is.
Either you believe you have two ways of thinking here that I'm thinking is what's going on in America today, and the Black Lives Matter group and those who think like they do, They genuinely believe that police officers in America, as a rule, are racist, they hate black people, and they're abusing their power to harass and or kill them. And so it is with these people, it's almost a war with the police. If you believe what I just described, you would feel like, I'm going to need to take up arms here or something right. like that. Okay, so that's one perspective. So the other perspective is the majority of Americans, I think, that cops are not getting up every morning, brushing their teeth, going, you know what, I can't wait to go out and harass me a few black boys, you know, and maybe I'll kill one or two. Right. You know, I think I'll.
Because I'll get away
with it. We'll see you, honey. I'll see you later tonight.
Yeah.
Are things of that nature. In other words, that it's a systematically racist position that cops, white cops particularly, naturally have. You have to believe that in order to subscribe to what a lot of these Black Lives Matter people believe. Maybe there's something in between that I missed. Eric, do you see it as I've described it?
Yeah, I would push back slightly to what you said.
Okay.
I don't want to paint a broad brush, because I do know some people that are advocates for the Black Lives Matter movement,
okay,
which I question from a Christian perspective because of some of their other stances that they have, but who don't necessarily assume that all cops are racist and evil. There's some people that just simply see an issue within law enforcement because they have a perception that law enforcement maybe in the militarization of law enforcement, which is a totally different topic. Maybe there's just there's a problem within law enforcement as far as being heavy-handed. But you do have a large percentage of that population that do believe that cops are, you know, that there are many. I had a conversation with a friend of mine last night, who has a totally different life that he's experienced. He has a criminal record. He's been to prison before, but he and I had a long conversation, and he basically believes all cops are bad. And I turned that back around, and he does that based on the actions of a few. I turned that back on him and said, using your rationale, your justification, since how there's a high crime instance within a lot of, not all, but a lot of black communities in the urban area, somebody would be okay with assuming that all black people are bad based on the actions of a few. I said, this whole putting everyone in the same pot, the whole broad brush painting that humans have a tendency to do, is just wrong, regardless of how you put it. And laws and all those things are important, but until the church addresses, and I primarily want to put the responsibility on the church, until the church addresses the as you said, the heart issue, the fact that the heart of a man is deceitful and wicked beyond measure and is sinful by nature, until we proclaim the gospel truth within all communities, not just the black community, but in the police community as well, within the white community, Asian community, Hispanic community, until we proclaim the true gospel and God transforms hearts, this will continue on, and we'll always have to deal with this issue.
Eric, thanks so much for being our guest. Appreciate your perspective and your years of service in law enforcement. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. You guys have a good day.
Eric Muldrow from Arkansas, Muldrow. Just learned about Eric's, his experience this morning. He was on with Mickey and Will Addison on Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Communications, a ministry division of American Family Association. Speaking of Miki Addison, she will be joining us after the news, as will
continue on.
Abe Hamilton.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio. American